Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's our Pets and Vets program this afternoon, final one before the fun drive, which begins a week from this coming Monday. Here to take your calls is Dr. Courtney Fitzpatrick of Veterinary Specialties Referral Center in Pattersonville, New York. Dr. Fitzpatrick is a graduate of the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine. She did her residency at Cornell, where she specialized in orthopedic and soft tissue surgery. She joined the Veterinary Specialties Referral Center in 2010. Her areas of interest include angular limb deformities, corrective osteotomies, we'll find out what that is in a minute, surgical oncology, and minimally invasive procedures. She's also done extensive research in post-operative pain management. A native of Florida, she enjoys everything about the Capital Region, the people, the pets, even the weather, and we'll find out about that coming up. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551 if you have a pet question today. And you can also join us. Well, let's see. Let me run this down. You can post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Or you could tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. All right. All the formalities are done. Dr. Fitzpatrick, nice to have you here.
Well, it's nice to be here.
Boy, I tell you, you just made it.
I know. Well, I was on the other side of the street.
Well, that is a WAMC building as well, but I'm glad you found us. Nice to have you here, and let's go through a little of this. Osteotomies, what is that?
Well, that's where we cut the bone, and we're purposefully fracturing the leg.
Oh, okay. So
yes.
that happens with people, too, sometimes.
It does sometimes. Specifically, we're doing this for a lot of limb deformities. So if a dog has a crooked leg, we're cutting the bone, maybe in a couple of spots, but hopefully just one spot to straighten it out.
Now, do various breeds have more incidence of deformities, limb deformities?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And sometimes we breed for those deformities, such as a basset hound or a dachshund.
Yeah.
They specifically have these deformities to their legs.
Why would you breed them that way?
Well, I think that it comes along with the breed standard, and as we start to get longer dogs, we start to get shorter and squattier dogs, that those deformities come along with it. And in some particular individuals, it's over-accentuated, so they're too deformed for even their joints to keep up with.
Very interesting. Now, I don't know if you've ever heard this program, but you will take a wide range of questions.
Oh, I can imagine.
And just do the best you can. Let's go right to the phones, 800-348-2551. Anita in Waterville, you're first.
Hi.
Hi.
I had a question about my old cat. She's about 17, and she constantly asks for food. It's a little strange because I'll put a dish of food down and she'll eat a few pieces. This is kibble. And then she'll go sit on a pillow. And then I come into the room 10 minutes later, and she yells for more food. And I put the dish back down, and she eats a two or three, and it's kind of annoying.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's the food. Is it not satisfying?
All right. Doctor?
Excellent. Anita, what's your cat's name?
Onyx.
So Onyx potentially could have a very common condition that we find in kitties. This is a condition where the thyroid gland becomes overactive. Unfortunately, in people, it tends to become underactive. But in kitties, they get the reverse problem, and their thyroid gland can start to go into overdrive. And when that happens, that causes them to be hungry and have an insatiable appetite. So they eat and eat and eat. But lo and behold, they do not usually gain weight. So that it's a condition that we do find commonly in the older kitty cat, and something that a simple blood test by a regular veterinarian could help us figure out if she has. And there are lots of different treatment options. The most common used treatment option for most owners is a pill that actually regulates their thyroid levels.
So diet will not fix this?
Diet usually will not. It's a problem with the body's endocrine system, so it's an overdrive, essentially.
Okay. Uh-huh.
But she doesn't eat a lot. She just—it's almost like if she sees me coming, it means food.
Oh, so she's just nibbling at her food?
Yeah, she'll only eat a few.
Has she had any recent blood work that looks at her kidney function and all of that's okay?
A lot. Oh, she has she does have kidney problems.
Oh, that may be affecting her appetite. I wonder. Yeah, as the toxins build up in their bloodstream because of their kidneys not working well, then it can make them become essentially a little bit nauseous and really not be that interested in food. And so a lot of kitties, when they demonstrate nausea, it's actually they run up to their food as if they want to eat, but then they change their mind after they have a bite or two.
Oh, that might be it, because she looks so interested, and then it's like she forgot.
Oh, goodness.
Maybe she doesn't like kibble.
Yeah, it's a science diet, mature,
interesting.
Active longevity.
Okay. Well, Anita, thanks a lot for the call. Now, you know, we've had doctors on here who say, stick with the meat. Don't do the dry food as much. Does that help the kidney function as the cats get older?
Well, as kitties get older, their kidneys do take a beating because they are desert creatures by nature, and so they don't drink a lot of water. They're bad like some people are, and they're hard on their kidneys through life. And so the concept of feeding them canned food actually makes them drink more water because the canned food is made of mostly water. So they are getting more water that way, so it's friendlier on the kidneys.
I see. Our guest today, and it's her debut voyage, Dr. Courtney Fitzpatrick of Veterinary Specialties Referral Center in Pattersonville, New York. Number to call is 800-348-2551. If you get a busy signal, just try it again. We'll move as fast as we can. Teresa, or is it Teresa in Stillwater?
Teresa.
How are you?
I'm kicking. Not bad for an old lady.
That's good. You're on.
Okay. Mine is purely an economic question. I use the flea and tick preparations. I've been using Frontline. Well, I don't know if it's okay to name brands.
Well, you just did.
Yes, I know. then there's the other one that's comparable. But, you know, they're like $50, $60. And I found another product with that's made by another pet company name that's about $20 cheaper. And I'm just wondering if you have any feel for how these products work and whether or not the cheaper product would be as good.
All right, that's a great question. And, you know, without getting into endorsements, Doctor, maybe just a general sort of rule of thumb.
Yeah. You know, that's a tricky question and something that actually your regular veterinarian may have a better handle on because as a small animal surgeon, I don't get a lot of the feedback as to those products. And
okay.
So, you know, being from Florida, we definitely had a heavy flea and tick infestation down in Florida where I originally grew up. And certainly fleas seem to be developing resistance to some of those products. And so the Frontline that came out years and years ago, we started using those like water. And those products seem not to be as effective these days. And so it actually may be a better question posed to your regular veterinarian to see if they have seen some products in our area that are doing better than other products.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure that they're safe for your dog, especially if they're around kitty cats, because some of those flea products can be dangerous if kitty cats are exposed to those.
All right.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So consult with your vet.
Okay. Thank you for the info, dear.
You're welcome, Teresa.
Thank you very much. So, you know, is it possible that the fleas are now just becoming immune?
I believe that they are developing some degree of resistance.
Wow, it's amazing.
Just like bacteria develop resistance to antibiotics, insects can develop resistance as well. And so it does seem to be the case these days.
And how did you make your way up here from Florida? And why do you love the weather? Today is not a good day to put that in the script, by the way.
Well, today I feel like I'm back in Florida. It was a roundabout way of getting here. I did an internship at Colorado State University and tried it out west. Loved it out there.
Yeah.
But ultimately, when I got my residency at Cornell, you know, I was kind of acclimated to this area, this kind of weather.
Yeah.
And so Albany was just a hop, skip, and a jump away from that.
Right up I-88. Okay,
yeah.
Our guest is Dr. Courtney Fitzpatrick, and it is Pets and Vets. Let's take one more quick call before break. 800-348-2551. Rich in Wilton, you're up.
Hey, happy Wednesday, guys.
And to you.
Real quick multi-question. I think they're connected. I have a cat that I rescued from an old farm, and she's 2 years old. I've had her to the vet. She's done all of her, you know, the neutering and all of that stuff's done. But she has developed in the last couple of weeks this unrelentless digging of her ears and chewing on plastic on her left side. I called the vet, couldn't get an appointment right away, and he had suggested buying an over-the-counter medication for something called a mite in the ear, and they could be related.
Right. And
what is a mite and what's it do?
That's an excellent question. A mite is a tiny little parasite an ear mite specifically is a mite that actually lives in the ear, as its name implies. And so what it does is it finds its home there. It's usually caught or contracted by contact with other animals that have this mite as well. And it burrows into the ear, deep down inside the ear canal itself. And it lives on the surface of the canal, but down within. And what happens is that mite sets up shop, and it causes inflammation of the ear, which causes it to be itchy. It can cause secondary infections. And so they do tend to scratch at their ears a lot. And a lot of times these cats will have a lot of black debris that comes out of their ears and comes out into their nails as they're scratching at their ears.
I've seen that in her ears, yes.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, so it's something that your veterinarian, when you do take your kitty to the vet, may want to do an ear swab, where they actually put a little Q-tip down in the ear and collect some of the debris and look at that debris under the microscope. They can actually see a little mite moving around, and that's how it's diagnosed.
Is it a topical way to cure it, or does it a pill?
It's usually a topical, but now there are some spot-on treatments that are reportedly will help with ear mites as well.
Okay, Rich.
Well, I did buy that over-the-counter medication, and I put it in her ears last night. She won't talk to me today.
Oh. The plate of kitty medicine.
Oh, my God. She's like my ex-wife. I don't know.
Ooh, ouch.
Like
hey, that's a great spot to take a break, Rich. Well done. Let's do it, Zach. 1-800-348-2551. Uncalled for, Rich from Wilton. More on the way.
Support for WMT comes from Mario's True Value Home Center, Valencia. Featuring a new kitchen and bath design center offering Starmark cabinetry, Cambria, and more. True Value, start right, start here. Mario'sTrueValue.com. Riverbend Animal Hospital, Route 9 in Hadley, Massachusetts, providing small animal medicine and wellness care, general and referral surgery, canine rehabilitation, laser therapy, and dentistry, riverbendanimal.com. Cafe Capriccio, offering private catering for groups of 10 to 40 and escorted tours to Tuscany, locations in Albany and Saratoga Springs, cafecapriccio.com for reservations. And Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors. EmpireExhibits.com.
So as I mentioned at the top of the show, the fund drive starts on Monday the 23rd. And if you're interested in being a volunteer, we'd love to hear from you. It starts Monday around 6 o'clock in the morning on the 23rd. If you'd like to sign up for some volunteer work, call Felicia Burke at 800-323-9262, extension 189, or you can email her, fburke, that's B-E-R-K-E, at wamc.org. And by all means, make your pledge at the lockbox online, wamc.org. Look for the picture of the lockbox. And, hey, we're about at $110,000 now. Everything counts on the first day of the drive. Could shorten it by a couple of days. Let's keep at it. 1-800-348-2551 is the number on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. Pets and Vets, Dr. Courtney Fitzpatrick here today. We go to Abby in Saugerties. Abby, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Courtney.
Hi there.
I have a Chinook, an 8-month-old Chinook, which is a North American sled dog breed.
Yep, absolutely.
And we're going to be getting him ready to do a sport called skijoring, which is where...
Oh, I've heard of that.
The dog runs in front of you and you're behind on cross-country skis.
That sounds like fun.
And also you can do dry land, too, with bike joring, where you have a special rig set up with, like, an X-Fax harness, and he runs in front of you with a mountain bike, and you can go on.
Sounds like what I used to do as a kid with my dog.
Right. So my question is that my breeder told me that, first of all, I need to wait. He's only 8 months old, and
right.
I just wanted to check with you sort of when is a good time. Like, when can I really just let him go for it? And also, should he be taking some kind of supplement now while he's young?
Sure.
Is it worth it in terms of his joints? And I heard vitamin C at 6 months and on, and I just wanted to know what you thought about that.
Excellent questions. Yeah. Okay, so going back to starting training and at what age is that appropriate, usually we try to hold off on those until they're skeletally mature. So for that particular breed, you're probably talking around, 10 months, 12 months is when the skeletal maturity should hit. And at that point, I would introduce them into the sport. And obviously, you want to slowly increase their activity. So we don't want to go from being a couch potato to running a marathon away. We want to gradually introduce them to this activity just to give their muscles time to adapt to the new stresses that are going to be put on them. As far as a supplement goes, glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate supplements are definitely something great for the joint. Have they been definitively proven in clinical trials to work? Not exactly. There's a lot of in vitro, meaning looking in petri dishes at cartilage cells, and it does make them very happy using those kinds of supplements in that situation. They're not going to hurt the dog, and so that's the biggest thing. The only thing they're going to hurt is the pocketbook, of course. But when it comes to supplements, you have to be careful of your supplement because the supplement industry is not heavily regulated by the FDA, and so a lot of times the label is not completely accurate. So when it comes to our products, we have to make sure that we trust the source of the product.
And how do you gain that trust?
Well, it's hard. It's very difficult. So what I like to do is look at studies, research studies that have been done, and not done by the company itself, but done by independent researchers. And so one particular study looked at a whole host of glucosamine chondroitin sulfate products, and it was very disappointing. The products on the shelf, and a lot of times they do not have what they say that they have in them, or not in the proper quality or quantity. And so, there's a particular product that I use because I know that independent researchers have looked at that product and have used it.
Well, I mean, you're an insider to some extent.
Exactly.
You get inside information, but how would someone out there be able to come up with that information?
It would be very difficult for an owner beyond just trusting what their veterinarian tells them. So I would, definitely seek the advice of your veterinarian because they're going to have that information available to them.
So okay. Even local vets, because I found that the whole proper nutrition for dogs, especially canine athletes, in particular, if you're going to be running a dog for 20, 30 minutes on a trail, they need a different kind of nutrition.
Right.
And I've been... I'm a little bewildered. I go to all these websites and everyone says something different and I want to do the best for him.
Absolutely. What I would refer you to then is there are specialists in our fields called nutritionists, and their entire job is based upon formulating a diet for that particular dog. And I know at Cornell University where I did my residency, they do have an on-staff nutritionist and they will do consults like that. So it's better for the dogs that need those homemade diets with specific ingredients, but certainly it can be good for a canine athlete as well.
Okay. Abby, thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Bye. It's Vox Pop on WAMC Pets and Vets. Dr. Courtney Fitzpatrick is our guest. Let's go to, I can't read it.
Regina, I think.
Is it Regina? Hello, is this Regina?
This is she.
You're on.
Thanks for taking my call, doctor. I really appreciate it. I have a 10-year-old German Shepherd mix. She's half Shepherd, half Australian Sheepdog. Very active, smarter than me. we found her at a shelter in Los Angeles. She was taken away from her pack very young, kind of dumped on the streets. And she's had a tough life because every dog that's approached her over the years has pretty much attacked her. She's got that kind of energy that just...
Oh, no. Brings out the worst in others.
Right. She has been. She's been grabbed by other shepherds. We've had to be real careful with her and manage her because what's happened with her is she just tends to be really hostile toward any dog that comes toward her. And
right.
She really was pulled through our fence in our backyard and almost killed by the neighbor's German Shepherd.
Wow.
And oh, my goodness.
She was really hassled a lot when she was a puppy in the shelter. And we've got a dog that doesn't like other dogs at this point.
Well, of course.
My question is this. Is there any rehabilitating a dog who's older and has got real problems with other dogs? She's great with family dogs.
Right.
She knows she's had time to be around them, and she's great with them. But dogs that she meets or dogs in the neighborhood,
sure.
Is that a problem? possibility for older dogs.
You know, I never say never. Everything is possible out there. But as they get older and they've had so much conditioning for the last 10 years of their life, you know, all they have known is aggression, that it is going to be difficult for rehabilitation of that dog to strange dogs. You know, obviously you want to try to acclimate them to other dogs and do it in a slow and controlled manner. So your house dogs and everything, all the other dogs in your house and your friends' dogs. But the strange dog, it is going to be a very difficult situation to overcome.
She was in a kennel staying for a couple nights, and by mistake, they put her in with a mountain cur.
Oh, goodness.
Because it was an inside-outside deal. So she was inside, and they thought it was the mountain cur's outside part, and they put the text
right.
The mountain cur in her kennel. And when they realized 45 minutes later that they completely messed up, they went running back. And she and the mountain cur were sleeping on top of each other.
Well, there you go.
Essential, but
right.
So sad at this late age for her that she doesn't have the comfort and the friendship of other dogs. So,
yeah, I mean, it might be best at her age to just separate her and you know, keep her around dogs that she's comfortable with, but not introduce her to strange dogs.
Yeah,
we really don't, because we know her nature. And I was just wondering if, in general, there was some path to rehabilitating her and leading her towards, you know, maybe some friendships, but if not,
yeah, I think it might be easier to just try to avoid those situations in a dog her age. There are rehabilitation methods, but you would have to work heavily with a trainer and put a lot of investment and time and effort into that.
It's sad because she's a better person than I am, but thank you so much for your help.
Absolutely.
Regina, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551. A couple of open lines now for Dr. Courtney Fitzpatrick on our Pets and Vets program. Cynthia in Petersburg. Cynthia, you're on.
Hello, Dr. Fitzpatrick.
Hello there.
I have a wonderful kitty who's about 3 years old, very loving. I adopted her at 1 year of age. She had been with a dog and infested with fleas and was rescued.
Well, she's lucky.
Well, so am I. But we have this problem. In the middle of the night, two or three times, I get this meowing in my ear to get me up.
So, of course.
You know, so I give her a love and a hug, and I get up and I check the food, I check the litter box, everything is fine. And I don't know how to what the problem is. And if I don't stay up, I get this running around.
And has your kitty done this since you adopted it?
Yes. more or less, yes.
Yes. And is she an only cat household, or does she have a friend?
She's an only cat, and she's an indoor kitty because
gotcha.
They specifically requested that.
Right.
And I live on a road that's traffic.
Sure, sure.
Would a friend help?
Well, a friend may make twice the noise at night. the problem is that you are up against a nocturnal creature.
Yeah.
Kitties
yeah.
are nocturnal by habit, and so they're until they get older and start to settle down in life and stop playing, that's their playtime. So you're kind of fighting Mother Nature right there.
So I need to play a little bit in the middle of the night.
Well, be careful of that, though, because you are also conditioning him to that habit, and you're rewarding her, essentially, for that behavior of waking you up. So the best way to avoid it is to ignore her, which is difficult at 3 a.m. But otherwise, if you pay attention to her and play with her, she says, oh, you know what? I'm going to try that again because it worked last night. And so you're just perpetuating that habit.
Oh, I don't want to reinforce that.
No, try just shutting your bedroom door and keeping her out of it. That may calm it down, or at least muffle the sound so you can't hear her.
The other thing that happens is if I try and pick her up and walk around holding her,
mm-hmm.
she doesn't like that.
Oh,
yet
no.
The other time, she has to be with me, you know, 24/7.
Sure. Some kitties are like that. They like to be in control, and you holding them is not part of that control.
Yeah.
In other words, she has to choose.
You got it.
Okay.
Okay.
Cynthia, thanks a lot for the call. It's funny. We have a cat in our neighborhood now, just a neighbor's cat who has now adopted our property and my daughter's.
Mm-hmm.
And this cat loves to be held. I mean, this is the friendliest, most docile cat, but I've had many other cats
who don't like it.
No, stay away, you know.
Very strange. They are individuals.
They really are. A lot of personality. Nancy and Saugerties. Nancy, you're up.
Yes. My husband and I, for many years, when we were raising our children, we had English setters.
mm-hmm. and which we loved, you know, and everything. And now we have a little grandson, and we were considering getting a golden retriever. But we hear stories and have read, perhaps, that they are prone to disease. Do you know anything, have any information on that? And well, black labs are not as prone to disease, I've heard? Or
oh, I don't know as I would go that far. I mean, certainly, you give me a dog breed, and I can give you a disease that is known in that particular breed. Golden uh-huh. retrievers, the downside is that cancers do tend to run higher in that breed, and we think that it has to do with genetics.
What runs higher?
Cancer.
Cancer.
Yeah, there's a few different cancers that tend to run a little bit higher in the golden retrievers. Same with uh-huh. Bernese Mountain Dogs, and it does seem to be lowering their life expectancy on whole.
I see.
Yeah, but you know, even with that, you can give me any other dog, and it's still prone to cancer and you know, other developmental diseases, orthopedic type conditions like hip dysplasia and ACL injury in the dog. You know, all of those breeds are kind of things that come along with breeds like that.
What's the one that has the least trouble?
mixed breed dog.
Really? Yeah, that would make sense.
Hybrid Vigor. But to be honest, the standard poodle is another breed that comes to mind. Like if you're looking for an AKC registered breed that I don't run into a lot of troubles with, aside from bloat of the stomach and twisting of the stomach. That's the only condition.
From eating too much?
Yeah. Well, not only that, but their chest is so deep that it predisposes their stomach to twisting about its axis.
Okay. All right.
I see. What about the black lab? What are they prone to?
Fairly similar things to the golden retriever. They are prone to hip dysplasia, an ACL injury, elbow dysplasia, when we're talking uh-huh. orthopedic. They can get cancers just as much. The goldens, I'd say, would probably run a little bit higher when it comes to cancer, but it's all statistics.
Yeah.
I see. Uh-huh.
Well, Nancy, thanks a lot.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you very much for the information. We appreciate your show. Enjoying it.
Thank you very much. Dr. Courtney Fitzpatrick is our guest. You know, it'd be interesting if you could go back many generations with some of these breeds that are selectively bred mm-hmm. and find, okay, you know, 20 generations ago, cancer was not a big deal in labs.
Oh, absolutely. That has been found in, you know, the Bernese Mountain Dog is a classic example where, you know, originally they had just a run-of-the-mill, you know, risk compared to all the other dogs, but these days they're much more prone to things like histiocytic sarcoma, which is a fancy cancer that is very deadly and has come up in this breed.
Are there any attempts, you know, breeding sort of to try to breed that out of the breed, or, you know, in a select group, and then
yeah, there are. We're just starting with DNA banking, and in our profession as a whole, it's a relatively young concept. But people have been banking dogs' DNA, so they take a purebred dog with a specific condition,
yeah.
They grab a blood sample on it and put it in a bank, and now we've got an entire database of dogs with, you know, X condition, and you've got all of the blood that has the DNA of those dogs and compare them to a control population that doesn't have that condition. And so now we're starting to try to sift through those and see if we can find which genes are responsible or putting them at prone to these conditions, and seeing if we can then work backwards and try to eliminate them.
That is fantastic and really interesting. And in a way, it's something that can't be done with human research. So down the road, it may have positive benefits for humanity.
Exactly.
By the way, Brian Shields just handed this to me. A severe thunderstorm watch has been issued for much of the region until 10 o'clock tonight. Severe thunderstorm watch issued for much of the region until 10. We'll have the news coming up at 3. Brian Shields will have Northeast Report at 3:30. He'll keep you apprised. The number to call, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Gene in Bloomberg, you're on.
Hi, my name is Jean. I'm calling from Bloomingburg, and so my question is, my husband and I just adopted a dog from a shelter a couple of months ago. He has a very troubled history. He spent the first 2 years of his life at a hoarder's house in a crate where she had crates stacked on top of one another. He was rescued from there eight months ago. And he has been in the shelter ever since, where one day he was beaten by one of the male people who work there. So he's now terrified of men. He's adapting well to living in a house, and he loves me, but he's terrified of my husband. And I'm wondering if you can give me any ideas of how we can work through this.
Okay.
Oh, that's a very difficult question.
Yeah, he's such a sweet dog.
Exactly.
Terrified of anything new.
Uh-huh. And unfortunately, it's the men that seem to be more imposing to our dogs and make them more fearful. One of the things that you can do is have your husband, you know, try to spend more time with the dog, like one-on-one, without a lot of other distractions that might make your dog nervous. You know, let your husband know that imposing threats to a dog would be like looking him in the eye. So instead of looking the dog in the eye, you know, have him keep his head down and let the dog come to him, not vice versa.
That's what we've been trying to do, and he won't go anywhere near my husband.
Really? Is the dog very food motivated?
He won't eat when my husband's in the room.
Oh, wow. Okay. So we can't use food to coax him.
Right. Oh, my husband has to go in the other room when I feed him.
And how many months have you had this dog?
We've had him for 2 months.
Okay.
I have two other dogs that he gets along very well with, especially my younger female. They play together all the time. I have not yet been able to trim his nails. He won't let me near his nails. But other than that, he has no problem with me. But I'm just afraid that my husband's going to start getting frustrated.
Right, right. I mean, aside from working with a behaviorist on this, it's going to be a tricky situation. But you know, the best medicine for it may just be benign neglect and have your husband ignore the dog, because sometimes it's when we're trying to coax the dog to us, that's actually more threatening than just standing off and letting the dog figure out that it's okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good plan.
Okay. So we'll just have to be patient then.
I think so. Yeah, it can take time for this.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're
welcome. Thank you for taking my call.
Jean, thank you for calling. And it is Vox Pop. It is Pets and Vets. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Dr. Courtney Fitzpatrick is our guest. More of your calls coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking, rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires. AshfieldStone.com. Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, New York. A classroom in the wild helping schools, organizations, and individuals reconnect with nature, history, and the arts. AshokanCenter.org. The Albany Academy and Albany Academy for Girls, celebrating 200 years of academics, arts, and athletics. Strength in our foundation, inspiration for the future. AlbanyAcademies.org. And Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more, where eyewear is an art. Facebook or VisionExcelEyeCare.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. The number to call is 800-348-2551. Here's one that came via the internet. Hi, thanks to rampant breeding for profit, so many breeds are now suffering severe health issues. We talked about this earlier. Reputable rescues will screen their dogs to be certain of their personalities. They want a successful pairing and must make fabulous members of the family. The AKC has promoted profit and procreation. Although dogs are our best friends, the AKC is not the friend of the dogs. All right, that's from Marjorie. Not me, AKC. That is from Marjorie and Saugerties, and thank you very much. Weigh in, if you will, doctor, or not. It's up to you.
Well, I dare step into that realm of politics, but I do think that mutts make great pets.
Yeah, I think that makes a great deal of sense. Let's go to
absolutely
Jane and Lennox. You're on.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am a mutt fanatic myself. I have a wonderful, wonderful old guy. He's 12 and a half. He's a lab shepherd mix.
Oh, excellent.
And yeah, and he's just the sweetest guy.
However,
he does have hip dysplasia.
Oh, no.
We rescued him when he was 7, and he was diagnosed with, he was quite overweight at that time. And his first checkup, they screened him, and they said both hips were pretty bad.
Okay.
He's been on glucosamine, and just to give a shout out to, he's done very well actually on just garden variety grocery store glucosamine supplements.
Excellent.
So that's the good news. So here he is, a pretty old guy.
Uh-huh.
And he weighs 100 pounds, by the way. He's slimmed down considerably.
His
veterinarian says he's exactly the right weight for his size and build.
Perfect.
But he's a big boy. And so my question is regarding his hips. First of all, is hip dysplasia a progressive condition? And second question, his hips being the way they are they more vulnerable to trauma? Like if another dog on the trail, you know, pounces on his hind end, is that a risk factor?
Okay.
Also, I have questions about is this a painful condition?
Right.
And what do we do to keep him safe and promote a long life? I'll tell you my catastrophic fantasy is being on the trail alone with a 100-pound dog and suddenly his hips give out completely.
Oh, no. I hate to tell you, I've been there.
Oh, my goodness.
But it was not because of hips. It was because my dog had pad injuries. But going back to your question about hip dysplasia and will it progress? Well, it actually, hip dysplasia is a problem where the ball and socket joint aren't quite as tight as they should be, and so they're loose and the ball tends to slip out of the socket, and in puppies that can be a painful process as it stretches the soft tissues that are in that area. But as the dog gets older, that's actually not the problem. The problem is that as it slips out, it causes joints to rub abnormally, and so that leads to arthritis, and it's the arthritis that's the painful condition for the dog as they get older. And that arthritis, unfortunately, is a progressive process. It will slowly build. Certain breeds, specifically, I have to pick on the German Shepherd, being a breed that will develop arthritis at the drop of a hat. So
really?
You look at them cross-eyed and they develop arthritis. And so, you know, depending on how much arthritis they have, that can certainly impact their quality of life. I mean, surely there are many dogs running around with hip dysplasia today without any clinical signs. But as they get older, their arthritis starts to progress more and more, and it makes them stiff to get up. It makes them, you know, have their occasional painful days where especially those cold, rainy mornings, where it is a little bit tougher to get around for them. And
can you pop it back in?
Well, no. The problem is it's not popped completely out. It's just slipping out a little bit. So we call it subluxated, not luxated.
So not a dislocation.
So, exactly. It's just partially coming out. So it's just instead of the cup riding completely in the socket, it's riding on the edge of the socket, and that wears and tears on the cartilage.
Right.
You know, so for your dog, step one is to lose weight, which it sounds like you did a good job of, and that for many, many of our patients will do the trick right there. Glucosamine chondroitin sulfates, yes, kudos to you. You know, that's something that I would definitely keep your dog on. As they start to get older and those things start to fail, then there are non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, specifically for dogs. I try to steer people a little bit away from aspirin because it does cause ulcers in stomachs of dogs and can be a little bit more dangerous. But the safer ones out there are specifically designed for dogs. Your veterinarian probably has at least two or three on their shelves. There's different products out there, but you know, using those on the rainy mornings and especially when they've been out and overdid it on the weekend warrior syndrome, you know, using that is definitely beneficial.
All right, Jane, thanks a lot. We got to move it along, but we appreciate the call. Let's go to Alan in New Paltz. Alan, you're on.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I have a little bit of I always have a complaint when I call in anyway.
Of course you do, but that's fine.
My daughter is a vet assistant. She's going to become a veterinarian, and she finds out information like I do about flea and tick, you know, like Frontline, all these other products.
Right.
And one of the reasons there's a lot of cancer in dogs that never used to have cancer, that's one of the main reasons. But you can't put pesticides on an animal or a human being and keep doing it and expect it not to create problems.
All right. Are there any studies that would pose a correlation?
There actually is one particular study looking at dogs with bladder cancer, specifically Scottish terriers that are a breed more prone to bladder cancers, and some of the thought is that maybe the topical tick products are related to that.
Interesting. Yes.
There's no other studies out there for other cancers though, but that particular one, you know, there is some suggestion that maybe that's a link.
Well, Alan, thanks for that, bringing that to the table there.
One cancer is as good as another, right?
Well,
I don't know about that. There's some cancers I'd rather have than others.
Now you're over the line. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Joe in Kerhonkson. Joe.
Yes.
You're on.
Hi there.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a 9-year-old daughter who is absolutely nuts about dogs.
And
Me too.
We were thinking about getting her dog. You know, she's shown some responsibility with, we've had some training pets like goldfish and such. you know, so I think she's ready. We're ready. And we were thinking of getting her a miniature schnauzer. We live in an apartment, not a lot of room to run, and I just wanted to see what your thoughts are about that particular dog as a starter dog for a 9-year-old.
They're friendly dogs for kids, aren't they?
They seem to be. There's the occasional individual, but you can find an individual in any breed that is not so good with kids. The Schnauzer, you know, I get the worst of their personality coming to the vet's office. You know, Obviously the worst of them is going to come out at my office. But the Schnauzer is a pretty good dog. For an apartment dog, you want a dog that doesn't have, you know, a need to be on the go all the time, you know, a dog that can relax and chill out during the day, or if you have a place to walk your dog. I mean, the biggest thing is just making sure that, you know, you have enough good interaction with the dog. You can take it out on walks and activities and that sort of thing, and socialization. I mean, that's going to be, you know, huge for you and your daughter.
Yeah,
that we can do, and we live in an area where she's safe enough to walk around on her own outside.
The interesting thing I learned about those dogs, though, they have the double coat. They have the outside, the Brillo-like, and then under it's soft. What kind of maintenance does that require?
Oh, they do have to go to the groomer on occasion if you're one that wants them to look like in the show ring, you know, where they definitely need to their eyebrows trimmed and their ear hairs, you know. But it's a breed that I don't think is too terribly hard to upkeep.
Okay. Great. One more question, if you don't mind. I've found a site online that rescues schnauzers, and I might go in that direction. On the other hand, I might get a puppy, and if I do, should I wait until spring? Is it getting too late now to get a puppy to house train and so on?
Before
the winter comes around?
That's a good question. It depends on how much you like standing out in 10-degree weather in the biting snow. I'd rather not.
Yeah.
So I would probably wait till spring for me. But if you don't mind the snow, then hey.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Good luck, Joe. We appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Courtney Fitzpatrick is our guest on this Pets and Vets edition of Vox Pop. Mike in Kingston, you're up.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 1-year-old Yolab, and he has what my wife and I are calling iGerb at this point. It's kind of like a white, yellow mucus that develops in the corner of his eyes, almost like tears. And if I wipe it away at some points, I can almost watch it come back pretty quickly.
Wow.
But, I mean, it kind of comes off and on. It's not there all the time. But, you know, I was just wondering what that might be. Is it conjunctivitis type thing or ever seen anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly can be a conjunctivitis. Does your lab ride with his head out the window of the car when you're traveling down the road?
No, he doesn't. He runs at very high speed.
Oh, does he? you know, some dogs will trap a bunch of dirt and debris within their eyelids, especially the dogs that have saggy, droopy eyelids. Like some Labradors are prone to have. The St. Bernard is probably one of the biggest ones I could pick on with the saggy eyes. But that those eyelids can trap dirt and debris. So when a dog's swimming or running through the woods or riding with their car or their head out the car window, then they're trapping debris, and that can irritate the lining of the eyelid, which is, you know, the conjunctiva, that pink fleshy stuff. And when it gets angry, it likes to secrete. So, you know, definitely something that if it becomes a chronic problem, I would see your vet about, because there are other conditions of the eye that can cause things similar to this, such as dry eye, that would need to be treated medically.
It doesn't really seem to bother him. You know, there's no pain it seems to be associated with it. But could I put maybe like eye drops in his eyes or something? Could that help? Or maybe warm water or something like that?
I mean, the saline that you can get over the counter isn't going to hurt him, and that may wash some of the debris out. So especially if he's been swimming or running through the woods, you may want to try that to see if you can flush any dirt or pollen out. But if it's something that turns into a painful condition where he's wincing or whatnot, definitely see your veterinarian.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Mike, you're welcome.
Good luck. I don't know how the heck you'd put eye drops in a dog.
Good luck.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a lot of fun. Jan and Latham. Jan, you're up.
Hi. I got a two-part question, basically, is one, my dog's been diagnosed. She's in Newfoundland, by the way. And she's been an athlete, pretty much, hiking a lot of mountains over her years. She's been diagnosed with osteoarthritis. And I'm wondering, number one, we're thinking about putting her on Adequin, and what's your take on that? And I understand there is a shortage, I guess. And number two is she's been limping lately the past couple of weeks. I'm thinking it could be an ACL tear on top of this. So what's your take on ACL surgeries?
Oh, ACL. Very common in the Newfoundland. We want to pick on dog breeds and their conditions they're predisposed to. They actually did find the gene linked to this condition in the Newfoundland. And so, you know, arthritis. What joints have arthritis? Did your vet tell you?
She hasn't been x-rayed yet.
Oh, okay.
Something in the back legs. But
the back legs.
Sure. The knees or hip. Yeah.
It could be either one. Newfoundlands are also prone to hip dysplasia, and so, you know, definitely something that would be worthwhile to take some x-rays of both the knees and the hips. ACL injury in that breed of dog is going to be definitely a surgical repair.
Even for a minor?
Because the problem is in the dog that ligament will continue to deteriorate and tear, and so the instability of the knee really becomes a problem.
So how do you fix it? Is this a Tommy John surgery thing where you get a cadaver and put a...
No, it's not quite Tommy John surgery, but it is a major joint surgery where we're, for a breed of dog like that, we're actually rearranging the geometry of the knee to eliminate the need for the ACL. So we're cutting bone and rotating it. Yeah, it's definitely a complicated process. Not something for, I could spend an hour talking about ACL injury
maybe,
in the
maybe
dog.
Next time.
Maybe next time, absolutely.
All right, Jen, well, I guess the x-ray would be a key then, yes?
Yep, I would start with the x-rays.
Okay, and how about the Adequin? Is that shown success? I've heard a few people talk about it, and they said that they've had good luck with it.
Yeah, I mean, that comes down to the individual. There are studies out there that do show Adequan's beneficial, specifically for dogs that have hip dysplasia or arthritis of the joint, and there's definitely different ways you can deliver Adequan. Adequan is another, like glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate, it's a joint protectant, so it's designed to help protect the joint as best we can. It's not going to fix the underlying problem, though.
Okay. Jan, thanks a lot for the call. Is Adequan something that humans take as well, or is this a pet-only medication?
I believe it's a pet-only medication, but I could be wrong on that. It is an injectable, which is why I don't think that people would want it too much.
So just quickly, how is the process of allowing these drugs that are pet-only on the market different from the way the FDA does it for us? Or is it different?
I don't think it's different at all. I mean, unless we're talking nutraceuticals, and then the FDA is a lot more slack on the nutraceuticals, which is the glucosamine and chondroitin sulfates and all of those supplements that you can get.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough. Let's get one more call in here at least. Nancy in Westmoreland, New Hampshire, you're on.
Hi. This is Nancy. And the first thing I'd called about was that we have a Labrador. My son has a Labrador that only comes in heat once a year, and that's during hunting season. And if she were going to produce puppies, they would be under the Christmas tree. So that would not be good.
No.
Right.
We're looking for something to induce her to come into heat. I have talked with my vet. I've tried to get hold of Canadians. I hear they have the chemical.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, we only have about a minute, Doc, but go ahead.
Well, I think that I may take a pass on this one and send you back to your regular vet on that question.
I've done that.
What about romantic music and stuff like that?
I've
Barry White.
Been to my vet.
There are. Have you heard of theriogenologists? It's a fancy word meaning those are the people who specialize in reproductive medicine for our patients.
Well, yeah, I've contacted one over near the coast.
Oh, have you?
Okay.
Yeah. I would work with that person. They may be able to help you out a little bit.
Nancy, that was the most interesting call of the entire show. I wish we had gotten you a little earlier, but thanks for calling from New Hampshire. That'll have to do it today. Dr. Courtney Fitzpatrick, awfully nice to have you here. Veterinary Specialties Referral Center in Pattersonville, New York. How do they get in touch with you there?
Well, they can obviously call us on our phone or email us. Our website is veterinaryspecialties.com, so that's probably the first place to go. It'll have all of the information, the contact number, and the emails there.
That's a great place to start, and we are just about out of time. Thanks to everybody who called in. I'm sorry if you were left on the line. We just plumb ran out of time. Thanks again to Dr. Courtney Fitzpatrick for joining us. Support comes from HMT at the Spa Little Theater, opening their 29th season beginning October 11th with the musical comedy The Drowsy Chaperone in the Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org. Curtis Lumber, providing kitchens, baths, doors, windows, paint, flooring, and more since 1890 with 21 locations in New York and northern Vermont. CurtisLumber.com. Buttermilk Falls in Milton, a 75-acre Hudson Riverfront estate with lodging, a farm-to-table restaurant, an organic kitchen, garden, orchard, and spa. Booking day, evening, weekends, and events, buttermilkfallsin.com. And Charles Padula, DDS, Union Avenue, Schenectady, featuring Invisalign Orthodontics, digital x-rays, and Velscope oral cancer screening, PadulaDDS.com. All right, thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Thanks to Colleen O'Connell for answering the calls. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, oh, are you in luck? Tomorrow it's Birding with Rich Guthrie. Stay tuned now for a news update.